Today's episode is brought to you by Fire Facilities. Make training count with their custom-made, all-steel live fire training facilities. Their made-in-the-USA towers and burn rooms are the best for preparing, responding, and surviving the challenges you face every day. Today's guest is Todd Shepard. Now, Todd is a third-generation firefighter, and he's a 20-year veteran of the fire service. He's also the founder and owner of Forge Fire & Company. He does live fire instruction. He also specializes in forcible entry, search, victim removal, ventilation, building construction, downed firefighter rescue, first responder self-defense, and so much more. Now, you may know that Todd was a former MMA fighter, but did you know he's a lifelong martial artist? He's boxed Golden Gloves, black belt in American kickboxing, purple belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and also Gracie BJJ Combatives certified. He's a hell of a guy. We have an absolute blast on this podcast. And if you haven't seen the promo for this yet, you got to go find it. It's awesome. So with that, Todd Shepard. Brother Todd Shepard, thank you for being on here. I was going over your bio. Of course, I've seen you do other things. And there's something about, I feel like you and I have a lot in common. We share a big background. So, for example, you're a former MMA martial artist, Golden Gloves, black belt karate and kicks. Black belt in American kickboxing, purple belt Brazilian jiu-jitsu. The list goes on and on. And much like yourself, I feel like we're connected because I was in marching band in high school. So do you feel like that's a thing? I mean, do you feel the connection or is it just me?
Oh yeah. I'm definitely getting the vibe. Yeah. We're vibing.
You're getting the vibe.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So let me ask you one more thing before we go into it, but, I'm about 215. I have zero coordination, very little muscle tone, I cry a lot, and when anybody approaches me, I'll fall into a fetal position and coat myself in urine. Do you think you could take me?
No, I don't want to deal with urine. And actually, that's what worked for me in my fights. I just pissed myself, and nobody wanted to touch me. It worked for me, too.
Yeah, or pee on them. Either way, you're having fun, right?
R. Kelly. Yeah. I listen.
Sorry, my voice is complete shit. So what are you drinking tonight? Did I see a drink over there? I'm guessing bourbon?
My drink of choice tonight is I'm going to sponsor Gentleman Jack here.
Nice. Can't drink that stuff. I'm from Kentucky, but I cannot drink bourbon or whiskey.
Uh-oh. We might not continue to be friends. I don't know. It's on the fence.
But what if I was able to get you good bourbon cheaper?
Now we're back in.
Boom, that's just like that. We're gonna our friendship will ebb and flow throughout the evening.
I got that ebb and flow.
Before we get into the fire stuff, honestly, I think it is so cool all the stuff that you have done with the MMA and the martial art. To me, it's such a dedication. It's such a lifestyle, really. And then I've heard you talk about how it translates so well into the fire service. Do you mind telling us a little bit about that?
It does. Yeah. I credit a lot of my success to martial arts and, you know, I probably won't say it as best as like Aaron Fields. You know, he's a fellow, one of us as well. And he really hits the nail on the head too. But, you know, I credit a lot of my success in the fire service to martial arts. I'm pretty much a lifelong martial artist. And, you know, what it taught me was just the efficiencies and professionalism and the best ways to train that I've really borrowed and gravitated to and tried to transition that to the fire service. You know, with being a former fighter, and I fought pretty heavily for a very long time, very competitively at a pretty high level. And what I kind of learned from those modalities is trying to translate how we can train better in the fire service. And it definitely teaches you mental toughness and structure, which we obviously need in the fire service. So I definitely lend a lot of my success to that for sure.
Is it as much as a step-by-step process when you're dealing with martial arts or any of that stuff? Is it just that step-by-step process, learning the minutia of every little detail so you can later, you know, put it together later in a fight? Do you feel like that translates very well to like American fire training? Because I know American fire training, a lot of people want to just jump right in and throw everything at it at once. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's correct. You know, it depends on how you're training and what you're trying to get out of the training, you know, whether it's martial arts or whether it's fire training. But I think how they combined and meshed together is, you know, the minutia of it is, if you're trying to specialize in a specific tactic or a specific discipline in firefighting, you know, you're going to break down every discipline systematically and try to hone your skills to become the best person you can be. Obviously, we're not going to be all experts in every type of fire training. You know, unfortunately, it's just not really possible in our career to really be an expert at every single thing. We just need to be have awareness and be good at, you know, a core group of the basics. But, you know, martial arts blending into that is just what it taught me was just the mental toughness and trying to systematically get better every day. And I think that's what I take away from it is just always being self-aware of yourself, what your strengths and your weaknesses are, and really trying to focus on your weaknesses. I feel like that makes a person grow much better than always focusing on your strengths.
Do you think there's more ego in the fire service or more ego in martial arts?
Both. And I think they both have come a long way. I think that both industries are very similar to where now with the internet and social media and the mass awareness and mass opportunities of fire training. You know, we have so many great conferences out there, you know, grassroots conferences, you know, middle of the road conferences, middle sized conferences, large conferences. There, you can't throw a stone and not hit a fire conference that's good in any part of our country. And with that coupled with social media and the internet, it's what has happened is, you know, back when the UFC started, it was the whole, you know, discipline versus discipline, and there was this whole theory of what actually would work, and it was more pertaining to what you saw in the movies. Was the flashy stuff was what was thought of that would work. And really, when it boils down now from then, 1990 to now, same with the fire service. Now we are in an age where we can prove and get across many planes of opportunities to prove what is working. And that goes across martial arts to fire training. We're able to actually scientifically prove what is working and social media and there's pros and cons to social media, but the internet and just the overall where we are in the age of fire training and the opportunities have really lent itself to the proof of what is working and what is BS, you know? And, you know, ego, there's always going to be ego in both, you know, we can't think in absolutes. And I think where we fall short or where people get caught up in both industries is always thinking in absolutes or having a bias. You know, you can't have a bias and you can't think in absolutes. If you think in absolutes with your tactics, there's nothing we do that's always going to work every single time. And both industries, you see that play out, that dichotomy play out where it, once people start thinking in absolutes or have a heavy bias towards one side of training, then you start to see some heavy weaknesses.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more on that one. I've noticed that for me, the mistakes that I've made in training, I was just recently retired. I was a training officer for the last 11 or 12 years. I forget. But my ego was like huge in it, in a bad way. I was like, I mean, how do I explain it? So like if people push back on me, with good, you know, like, hey, there's a thousand ways to skin this cat. I would be like, oh no, this is the way I learned. This is the way I learned in the book. When I first got in the fire service 30 years ago, there was no internet. There was no not a whole lot of conferences, nothing you could really afford to go to, but there was the American Heat videos. And those American Heat videos, you know, as terrible as they were, that was, it was like New York, Boston, Chicago. So stuff that didn't really apply to a smaller town. But that, so I think that's where I kind of got that bad, that training scar, is that there's only one or two ways to do things. Thank goodness that just like, you know, I ditched my first wife and got a great second wife. I ditched that horrible thinking. And now, you know, I realize, my, just like you said, there's absolutely no way to say this is the only way it works, with the exception of maybe water on the fire makes everything better. That, yes. Maybe that one. But training has really evolved. And I've noticed a huge shift in training. And you'd mentioned the internet. Boy, oh boy, that could be good or bad, right? I mean, like, yeah. I have seen some training videos on YouTube that have just been frightening. And there's no science behind it. It's, this is no joke. I saw, and I'm sure it's still up there. They were trying to figure out, this was several years ago, whether it's better to heel a ladder from underneath or heel it, you know, facing forward. Obviously, you don't want to be underneath. But what they did was they tied, did you see where they tied it to a lawnmower and pulled it?
I watched the exact same video and I was mind blown. I just couldn't.
Yeah. But you know what's funny? The very next fire I made, somebody tied a rope to a ladder with a lawnmower and pulled it out. I'm just kidding. That never happened. But it's the ability to discern the information you're looking at. That is the big part. You have to be able to look at the information and then know how to verify it. And that's kind of tough. Now, the FSRI, ULFSRI, is an amazing free resource. And, you know, ventilation and host stream mechanics and all that stuff. So it's kind of a one-stop shop, I think. Now, I know all the studies were really focused on water and water mapping, stuff like that, you know. But they've done studies now for search and rescue. They've done a lot of studies on ventilation. I know you're a truckie. So what do you think about some of the new information coming out with ventilation or search and rescue?
Well, I mean, I think you're absolutely right with what you previously said with just vetting any kind of training, whether it's on the internet, social media, in person. You know, that's a hard process to do until you get pretty experienced and well into your career. You know, I feel bad for some of the new people getting into the fire service with this day and age. You know, like I said, pros and cons. You just touched on that. Social media, internet, it is hard for new people to vet what they're seeing is realistic or efficient or productive or professional training. And some of it, especially if it's geared towards flashiness, they're going to gravitate to that. The young people, the new people in the industry. And that's a tough situation. You know, so ventilation, you know, it's not the end all be all. I'm a huge ventilation fan. You know, it definitely has to be coordinated. Basically what it boils down to is everything has to be coordinated. I mean, let's be real, you know, being real with ourselves, everything has to be coordinated, whether it's, you know, nonverbal coordination, whether it's just you have your set core guys on a fire scene that are your go-to guys that are just doing it impromptu. They don't need to be told that they have the forethought of watching what the situation is and sizing up and just doing it, or your company officer dictating those tactics to be had. Hopefully it's the first. You know, we want aggressive firefighters making comparable dynamic decisions without always being told. But fact of the matter is, whatever tactic you're doing, you know, it has to be coordinating. And so ventilation's one of those. It really only works. Ventilation only works well if you can size up what you have very well, depend on the stage of the fire, the heaviness of the fire. If you have heavy fire involvement, you have to dictate what are your resources. You know, you have to know your resources as a fire department and quickly discern if you can really accomplish vertical ventilation. And it it has to be systematically done with fire attack and search at the same time. And especially fire attack, you know, we cannot ventilate ahead of those tactics, or it's just going to make the situation worse, you know? So, and also just,
are you sure you're not an engine man? You're sounding like an engine man to me.
I briefly rode on an engine, you know, beginning my career, but I'm not going to say I wasn't a fan. I'm a fan of everything, honestly. I just, you know, people think, oh, Todd, you know, forcible entry, truck ops, but, you know, I'm a fan of everything. I'm a fan of everything that works, and I'm unbiased, and I'm a realist, you know. Let's do what is needed to get the job done and serve the community the best we can, and, you know, you can't deny putting water on the fire. So, you know, assessing a lot of tactics, a lot of your capabilities, a lot of your weaknesses. That's one thing fire departments struggle with, is assessing their weaknesses. Honestly, it's a constant struggle. It sucks. It sucks to tell yourself or tell other people or communicate professionally that, hey, maybe we're not good at this. Maybe we aren't set up well to do this tactic, say vertical ventilation. And with that said, maybe your best bet as a fire department, depending on the situation, is to get water on the fire and search and find victims and remove those victims and forego vertical ventilation or any type of ventilation process, because maybe you just don't have the manpower, maybe you don't have the tools, maybe whatever the case is. But you have to be willing as a fire department to assess those things and be real and be honest with yourself.
I couldn't agree more. And one of the things I've heard you talk about is about the blue collar aspect of the job. So I over the years, I've developed this theory, and I'm not saying it's a good theory. Again, I've been married twice, so I'm not saying I come up with gold every time. But for this one, it used to be, when I got in the fire service, that, you know, you weren't exactly a rocket scientist to become a firefighter. It wasn't looked down upon. But at the same time, it wasn't treated with respect it really deserved. It was all blue collar. These are tradesmen, craftsmen, and the firemen, blah, blah, blah. Well, over the past 30 years, the advances in hazmat and EMS and you know, rope rescue, swift water, on and on and on. I don't think we're blue collar anymore. We're not white collar. So I think it's like a light blue collar. I think we were the modern fire service firefighter is so intelligent and so able to do so many things at a moment's notice. So the old days of just going in and dragging hose and that, you know, strategies and tactics, everything has changed. And I believe the firefighter is probably one of the more professional people you're going to run across, because we do so much with so little in a short amount of time. And then we got to be able to pivot on a dime. You got to be able to pivot just like that. And, I've noticed a huge change in that. One of the things for me, and I love asking people this, is especially truckies. So I know of people that do default vertical ventilation. That's just that's what they do. That's their first line of defense, which I'm not for at all. I mean, if you need to vertically ventilate, do it. Absolutely. Without hesitation. But don't make that your go-to, right? You got to have more tools in your toolbox. But here's my question for you. You do a lot of search and rescue. You do a lot of vertical ventilation. For me, in the department I was at, we didn't have high numbers at fires, but we still vertically ventilated. My argument is this, and I don't really have any proof behind this, but it seems like to me, taking those two people off that roof and putting them inside, either searching or moving a line to put the fire out, for smaller departments might be the best idea. It might be the best idea if you don't have a lot of resources. What do you think?
I mean, I agree. You know, there's a part, I think a lot of us can say, if you're not totally biased, I think there's a lot of us that can say that I agree and I disagree. And it just really ultimately depends on the situation. But as a whole totality, I think that as a smaller department with limited resources, limited manpower, I believe that, you know, obviously life safety is paramount. So You can't always, it can never hurt to default to putting water on the fire and searching for victims. I mean, honest to God truth, it's that simple. If you have the resources and the manpower to get up there and vertically ventilate, great. But, you know, there's a lot of things that go into vertical ventilation or just any kind of any kind of ventilation where building construction, are you ventilating? Are you able to ventilate in the appropriate area? That's the other thing is reading the construction. We're not just talking about, you know, simple, you know, lightweight house construction, residential construction. We're really talking, if we really want to broaden our perspective of vertical ventilation, to do it appropriately, we have to talk about a lot of different kinds of construction. We have to talk about the situation and where the fire is, the stage of the fire. Can we even ventilate efficiently where we need to ventilate to appropriately get the response we want to get? And how much time is that going to take to do that? How good are our people to do that? How well trained are they to do that? And that's the stuff you have to be honest with yourself. And if you're not, you're not. So, you know, it never hurts to be absolutely 100% efficient, get the hose in, get water on the fire, search, do a very good primary search, a very good secondary search. And I think that can never hurt. I mean, there's always going to be people that are going to argue to the nth degree of you're wrong and I'm right or vice versa. But the fact of the matter you know, again, we're not thinking in absolutes. I'm not going to be the guy that's going to sit here and tell you an absolute. I'm not going to say we have to do ventilation. We have to do this. It really depends on the situation in the department. But I agree with you that if we get better at, you know, stretching lines, efficiently fighting fire, being aggressive with our tactics, aggressive on searching off the line, you know, while we're stretching a line and advancing a line and fighting fire, then we're a very productive fire company. And that goes a long way as well with limited resources.
You know, absolutely. But you just said something that you don't hear a lot of people pushing is searching off the line. You know, usually you hear people doing one or the other. You know, you got engine work, you got truck work, but the ability to search off the line and use the long and short side and all that, you just don't hear enough of that. And I think that some of these departments can get, and I know I was absolutely this way, compartmentalized, where you think that you have this job and this is your only job. This is it, you know, and then these other guys have this job when in fact you should be able to move about, you know, easily throughout each other's, or on the fire ground, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But I like what you said there. Let me ask you this: when it comes to search and rescue as a truckie, and we haven't even touched forcible entry yet. We're going to get there. We're going to get there. But when you do search and rescue, let me ask you this. Do you stick to the wall? Or do you go at it with your tick? Okay.
Nice. No. We can no longer make the excuse. When I went to the fire academy, you know, 25 years ago, it was, you know, the whole bullshit of we're allowed to cuss on here, right?
Oh, I'm sorry. No, we can't cuss. We cannot cuss. We can't say fuck or
the whole,
shit.
The whole bullshit of searching and grabbing people's ankles and crawling on our hands and knees and being in contact with the wall and being in contact with your training person and your cadre, that just is, it's complete bullshit. And you know
it is.
They trained us to be a liability that we had to then untrain ourselves with those training scars. But you know, if you're in this day and age, if you're still training on your hands and knees, and I don't want to say this to be rude, I'm not being an asshole, but you know, there are people out there still doing it. It pains me to see it when it's posted on social media. I just cringe. But like searching on your hands and knees with your head down, you know, touching the wall, doing a, you know, left hand or a right hand search pattern is complete garbage. It is. In this day and age, we have
tripod.
We've proven so far past this for many years with the science and the tactics of what works that, You don't need to be on a wall. You don't. You can be oriented without being in touch with something, and that lends itself with appropriate size up, appropriate experience, appropriate training, understanding your environment, understanding your capabilities. All those things lend itself into being a very efficient search, creating a search profile that you can then be quick and efficient and conduct a very good, thorough primary search without having to rely on being oriented to a specific thing like a wall or a person. And we have to get way past, we're way past that, but we have to get other people that are way past that.
It is a tough thing to teach older firefighters the tripod position and being able to move about the room, utilizing your crew to help direct you if you need it. It's so much faster, so much better. And I have seen, excuse me, I just burped. I don't know if I'm going to cut that out. I might leave it in there. It's a pretty good burp. It stinks pretty bad. But I've seen people, like I'll be teaching a class that has nothing to do with tactics or strategies. And then I'll see guys go in and they'll exhibit these horrible, they'll go to the left and they'll start doing that and they'll grab onto the boot. And these, so I'm going to brag and damn them at the same time, because a lot of times these are older chiefs, you know, that haven't been on a truck in a while or whatever, but they're taking a class. So I got to give them props, but I see that sometimes I'm like, or a 30 degree power cone, you know, in live fire. I'm like, stop it. But there's no excuse anymore for I'm sorry. You're a lazy firefighter if you do that kind of shit, because you're only worried about yourself. You're not seeing what's out there for free. You're not trying. You're not practicing. You got to get out there and you got to keep in mind. I forget who I was talking to the other day about this, but like the first on your ride to work, you need to be thinking of what you're going to do for that community that day, that what you need to think. And when you leave work, you need to think of, did I do enough for my community? It's not about, you know, what's for dinner. It's not about, I got to take care of my crew. No, when you're in the firehouse, you take care of your crew. But if you focus on the citizens, Chris Kessinger, citizens first, right?
Yeah.
If you focus on them, your people are already taken care of. If you focus on those citizens and you learn your building construction, you learn where everything's at, you learn fire behavior, you're already taking care of your people. But we are either we're paid or we're not, but to protect a community. That's what and not because we want to make it easy for us. Like I'm going to do my right-hand search. You know, 20 years ago, I've done a right-hand search, and the kid was, if I'd gone left, I would have found the kid probably like that. But we went all the way around that whole damn place. I don't know if we would have affected anything differently, but that sticks with you, man. You're like, because you're making a choice. Left or right. Well, based on what I see, I guess I'm going to go this way. But it's an antiquated way to deal with any kind of search and rescue.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned Chris Kessinger, a good friend of mine. And, you know, there's a lot of excellent instructors out there, him being one of them, Sean Duffy. I couldn't go through the list of excellent search instructors that are out there teaching very well very good search tactics. But, you know, Chris's conference he puts on, the name of it, you know, says it all. Prioritize the search. I mean, honestly, I don't know about other people, but especially young people, if you can take your young people, your new recruits, your rookies, and really drive home what prioritize the search or prioritize any tactic means, it honestly, to me, I don't know if a lot of people think this way, but it's mind blowing, because once you learn and get some experience under your belt, prioritizing the search tactics, your size up, the statistics of where people likely are, depending on the day and the construction, all these things play into live fire layout. All these things play into prioritizing and guiding your decision-making to be efficient and professional and productive, that then take away, why did you go left or why did you go right? You know, we got to get past the robotic training. We train. Part of the problem is this, as a fire industry culture, and it's still happening to this day. It's been happening forever. And I'm not going to say in absolutes that everybody's doing it, but there's a huge epidemic of we put these recruits through fire school. They're not proficient in anything. They learn what these things are. They don't learn the tactics. They learn the awareness of the tactics.
Yeah.
And they're not proficient at them. It's our job when they come to being hired on a fire department to then mentoring and having leadership and discipline and teaching them and getting them to understand and hone their skills past having awareness. They know what, you know, irons are. They know what forceful entry is. They know what stretching a line is, but are they good at it? Are they proficient at it? Are they making a ton of mistakes? Can they do it very well? A lot of them can't. I mean, I'm not going to say there's not rock stars as young kids, and I'm not saying, you know, everybody's in a situation, but we train in our recruit schools to, we train the basics, I feel, not very well, and then we leave them and throw them to the wolves once they get hired on a fire department and say, you're now blessed. Here's your blessing. You have your fire card. You're now employed. Figure it out. And that's not the right thing to do. Now they're taking real fires and real situations, and then we berate them if you're in a bad culture. Not everybody has good culture, and not everybody has bad culture, but if they're in a bad culture environment in the fire department, then they're getting berated because, you know, they're like, why the fuck did you do this? That's stupid. And, you know, now you're beating them down and deflating them and breaking their ability to think cognitively. And once you break their trust, then it's hard for them to really come back to you without feeling like you're going to scold them and say, you're stupid. How do you not know that if they ask a question? And that's a lot of the culture that's being, you know, pushed. And in the fire academy, we have to understand that we have to be searching the basics very well. We don't have the time. We should. That's the other thing. We should have a lot longer, in my opinion, a lot more intense, a lot longer fire recruit schools. And then when they get on a company, a fire department, then they need to really be mentored and lead and have good leadership and have, they really, in my opinion, once a new recruit, a new person gets hired at a fire department, they really need to go through a rookie school again of what the SOPs and the culture is and what is the expectations in their fire department. And I think we're selling people short if we don't do that, because now we're just taking a card, you know, a certification, and expecting that every single person is the same type of person and just saying, get it done. And we haven't established our baseline of what is acceptable and what is our SOPs and what is our expectations. And have you really learned this in the fire academy? You know, They've been given a Halligan, and here you go, and this is how you do forceful entry, but have they really done it enough to then go, hey, kid, go force this door, search this occupancy, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's like they're going to look at you like, okay, they're going to do it, you know, because there's the culture of shut up and do what you're told to some degree. So then yeah, it becomes, are they a liability, you know, doing that? So we have to really back ourselves up and go, you know, are we doing recruits, are – and there's fire departments doing it right, don't get me wrong. But the fire departments the fire departments that aren't, we really need to really analyze what we're doing to build these people up and make sure that they're the best servants for the community and what the oath they took.
It's a crawl, walk, run approach to training, generally speaking, but for recruits, it's the exact same thing. And a lot of people get hung up, like you said, your firefighter card, like your firefighter one. So when people came out of my academy, they were firefighter one and two, and then State of Indiana makes you a hazmat ops, and then I think we did rope ops. But anyway, you get these little cards, okay? And it says firefighter one and two and blah, blah, blah. But people have to stop, and they got to think that is not the finish line. It's a license to learn. It's not, it's the start of something, not the end of something. It's a minimum requirement. That's all that is. And we need to be training these people. And I tell you what, I'm kind of a big fan of a couple of things, emotional intelligence and generational awareness. And it's been proven that Gen X, me, the obviously the best generation, Gen X, we're leaving like crazy, and we're being replaced by a much younger generation. So now is the time for the fire service to take that in consideration and maybe relook at how we train them. You have to think about how, because I'm sorry, the way I was trained 30 years ago is not the way that people get trained today. And people could always say, well, you know, it was just times were different back then. No, I was taught stupid shit that was wrong. And when I try to think for myself, I wasn't allowed to. So we got to take this opportunity, start training our people. It's a responsibility we have to have. I get so mad when I would send students out. They've graduated, now they're on a truck. And then I get captains come to me, and I've said this on this podcast before, it drives me nuts. Well, you realize that this guy's never, ever, you know, run a chainsaw before he got on the fire department? I'm like, yeah, we don't, like, try to hire from lumberjacks. That's not a thing we do. You know, you teach them that, you know. And to me, it's a good thing. Teach them how you want to use a chainsaw. You know, so instead of fighting the generational difference, embrace it. Because if you care about your community, if you care about saving people, which is our whole job, our only job, then you got to take your ego out of the way. And it's been my experience that people like to say this kind of shit and berate you and call you dumb because that's how they were treated. And plus, they probably don't know how to do it any better anyway.
So that's part one. Obviously, we had a ton of fun. Check back in next Monday for part two. And do me a favor. Be sure to like, share, and subscribe. I'm desperate. I'm on a fixed income now that I'm retired. I need it. I've got to feed my family. Why won't you let me feed my family? Oh, my God.
Today's podcast was sponsored by Fire Facilities, industry-leading designers and manufacturers of realistic, built-to-last training structures for more than 30 years. Make your training count. Visit firefacilities.com for more information.